Greetings, you bastards. This is the Castabrous podcast. I am James McLean. James aggressively annoyed McLean today. My middle name is not A. It is, but it is today. It's double A. That's how annoyed I am. It's like being double X annoyed, triple X annoyed, but you know, you more than that, so you go to double Z. And what do you do after double Z? You go back to A. So I'm double A annoyed. How are you, Terranova?
I'm probably a little better than you, although I do completely understand your frustrations, which the dear listener
now,
probably does not.
We've just had a lot of troubles trying to set this recording up. Christian is away. He is, I have a horrible feeling, no more than something like either 20 miles away from me at the moment or going to be. He's on holiday. So we're just having to jury-rig a setup, and I was having to jury-rig it using Windows 8, which I'm sorry if I listen...
But you can actually stop there because they all know exactly what's coming next.
I just can't believe how atrocious it is. And if our listener is the Microsoft developer, obviously I'd imagine there's plural, but in this case I'm sure there was just one who was on a coffee break, drunk, missing his hands. It's just an incredible operating system. It's...
I love how you use the word incredible.
I use it in the Marvel-like term where you label your comic book with an adjective which really doesn't really particularly relate at all to the noun. I mean, yeah, I know Spider-Man is amazing. I know the Hulk is obviously in a lot of ways incredible. I suppose he's an incredible power. He's an incredible pest. But they don't really, do they? The uncanny, I never felt they were particularly uncanny. They just, same with Windows 8. It's incredible in that same sort of way. You can add any sort of incredible thing to it. It's an incredible piece of whatever. Anyhow, we've got Doctor Who this week, or we haven't got Doctor Who this week, which is becoming more and more common at the moment.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
So, Brian, what's your face been doing in terms of Doctor Who? What's it been angled towards? Is it angled towards any DVDs, or has it been angled towards any books, or has it been angled away from Doctor Who?
But you know, I spoke about this in a couple podcasts. I've been for the most part angled away from Doctor Who, taking a slight break for other interests. However, I had been angled slightly back toward Doctor Who in one area, which is the props. Because I had gotten a new piece to my collection, which is, it's a piece, this thing took me probably 9 months to get / make, because what it is it's a modification of the Wand Company Tennant Sonic Remote Control. Yeah. What happened was somebody on the RPF, goes by the name of Anakin Starkiller, made a replacement handle that would convert this thing into what's known as a wide slider Aztec sonic screwdriver, which is what Christopher Eccleston used partway through series one and what David Tennant used for most of his time as a doctor. He used it for series two and three. Well, still technically most. But anyway, what it is essentially it's the very first sonic screwdriver didn't have a slider channel. It didn't have a slider plate like we're used to seeing with David Tennant. It was a stationary button, and they would move the emitter head up and down manually. I believe it had a screw as a stop in there. And then they kind of, possibly to give Chris more versatility with the prop, they kind of decided let's let him be able to extend it in scenes. We were never meant to see how wide this channel was that they had cut into the body of the handle, because it was only meant to be used to show him extending it, but never actually show the channel. And over time, that got lost. And of course, you can see that slider channel in many episodes. So when I saw it on the RPF as a modification, and seeing what the price of the Wand Company Sonic was, I just saw it as one more kind of variant that I could have in my collection. So, and I thought, this shouldn't be that hard. All I got to do is get one, dismantle it. I had a friend in the UK who was going to make me new internals, that being the battery chamber and the acrylic rod with the blue LED and the wires. The reason for that is because the remote control electronics can be made to work, but I didn't want them to work. I wanted the black and the red wire, whereas the remote has yellow wires. And it seemed easy enough. He made that. All I had to do was fit that in the body, dismantle the sonic screwdriver, glue the head onto the new internals, and paint the new body. And then I could assemble this thing, no problem. It was really a lot of like simple, busy work, I guess, but it was fun for me, you know? Well, it turned out, A, I couldn't find the right paints. You can't get them here in America because, for instance, in California, they're illegal. So anybody that I knew out there that had them, they can't get them anymore. And in England, I can't ship them here because they're aerosol cans. So I was having difficulty finding the right colors. And I wanted mine specifically. I wanted it to be gray. I wanted the Series 2 and 3 look for this thing. So then I realized, okay, fine. You know what? I can't paint this thing. So I mailed it out to a friend in California who actually did have them. I will not mention names because, hey, what I just talked about with the paints, but, you know, took him because of the weather. That was another issue I had here. When I started this project, it was winter. I couldn't paint them in winter. You can't use those kind of paints in that weather. He had all sorts of bad weather out in California trying to paint it. So it took about 2 months for that. Second, I get the handle back, and this is now months and months and months of this project. I'm waiting to put this thing together. I was doing as much work as I could on this thing because I wanted to be proud of that fact that I had a hand in this thing. I get that handle back. I'm going to assemble it, and the acrylic tube is cracked. And I'm like, this can't be happening. So I had to contact my friend in England, and I just said, look, can you make me a new one? Better yet, can I send you all the parts? And not only you make a new one, can you do the final assembly? Because I'm done with this thing. It's annoying the hell out of me now. But it was 9 months. It should have taken, if I could have painted it, it should have max taken me maybe 2 months. But it brought me back in, not just because, hey, I've got this new prop, because, James, I know you know, but if the listener isn't aware, I do a lot of prop collection photos. As a matter of fact, we just put an album up on Casterbrus of my prop collection. But I generally like to do like compilation shots of certain things like the TARDIS keys. I'm doing one now for the sonic screwdrivers, which is one I've actually been working on for well over a year now, because I've started it. And then things like this other sonic screwdriver cropped up where I was like, well, why am I going to do the collection picture if I'm just going to get another sonic screwdriver? I think I'm finally there. I have one more piece to wait for, should hopefully have it in like 2 months, but I wanted to get a lot of the preliminary work done on this thing, so I didn't do it all at once, getting that final piece. So basically that's been my slight drawback in the Doctor Who here, is at least one angle that I still adore, which is the prop.
Well, I think we lost the Windows 8 web developer listener through all that. Just wasn't interested. There's just no software involved in it. It was just all hardware. It's just not his thing. He's good with the software. He knows how to make lots of great screens which do nothing and block your ability to actually interface with your desktop. But no. So yeah, sounds like a story for a TV movie there, I think, maybe.
You know, yeah, the story of my life with the sonic screwdriver. It's coming soon.
But I mean, it's the incredible intricacies. There was a program on last night in the UK on Lego builders. And it's that same sort of thing. And the funny thing is they had one guy who said, people at Christmas ask me what my wife is getting me, and she's getting me a large Lego kit. But I can't tell them that because you just wouldn't get hold of you wouldn't get past all the ribbing. And you think you're national TV showing them you spending five days through a 500-page manual building the Avengers aircraft carrier. You know, out of small bricks. Surely the Christmas thing is negligible in comparison, but apparently not. But I mean, you know, these intricacies, again, as we've said 1,000 times, are fascinating because I know very few people who don't have some sort of intricacy in their life. You know, where it's just the question of where it focuses at. You know, whether people are focused on the different changes in Manchester United's football t-shirts or, you know, there's a, you know, fascinating debate at the moment in a similar field to where you are with the eBay Liberator that was going again for, I think it was £33,000. It was meant to be the original Liberator from Blake Seven, the prop by Bowers, but looks like it's probably actually a replica made by Bowers, but wasn't actually used. It was probably made for a fan for a commission. You know, all these things, they're just so insular, but because they're insular, they're fascinating, like Lego or like Airfix kits. My dad used to love Airfix kits. He used to make loads of, you know, submarine Spitfires and all the likes. And it's just an extension of that sort of fascination of things which are small and intricate. It's just focus your attention on something which isn't large and pressurizing like money or your work or...
Yes.
You know, the multiple partners that you're enjoying at the expense of your main partner. And, you know, the problems that's probably going to occur some days, you know, I don't know.
Well, you know, it's also like we sit here sometimes and we think, like, what should we do tonight? And it's either like watch TV, go see a movie, go shopping, yeah, or what, you know, and it's like, and not that obviously, you know, if we don't travel, you know, there's tons of stuff to do when you're traveling because you're in a completely new area. But when you're in your usual area, it's like you've done everything, you've been everywhere. So having things like this, I do agree. It's like it's a great way to keep your attention and keep something interesting on something light and fun. And that certainly is what it is. It's really just
fun. But isn't there that is the sort of social snobbery that, you know, that you have to be going out and exploring places and seeing new things. And to be fair, you know, going back to Doctor Who, that is the very ethos of the main character.
Sure.
You know, there's that, but there is that snobbery that that's what you've got to be doing, where, you know, some people don't want to do that. You know, whether you see a new building or you watch a new TV show, it's still all relative to social perspective. You're still doing the same thing. You're observing something. Whether that thing is right in front of you, whether it's historical, whether it's artistic, whether it's insular, whether it's giant proportion, doesn't matter. You're still observing. Does it really matter what people observe as long as they're content? And I, you know, it does irritate me that, you know, there is, especially at the moment now, global travel is so affordable, especially for middle classes, you know, that is what you do. And if you're not doing that, you know, you're not living. And that again is the ethos of Doctor Who, isn't it? Is the Doctor, is, you know, to live is to explore and to experience and think, well, does it have to be? You know, if you enjoy, I know we've talked about this before. That's why I like Sheldon on The Big Bang Theory. This is that why, whether you decide that he's autistic or not, or whether he is just one of those crazy combinations of non-existent mental conditions that we can laugh about because they don't exist. The point is, the character actually enjoys his life when he's allowed to do what he wants to do. The only time he's upset is when he's pulled out of that zone. And we all have our own comfort zones. But the point being is that while people laughed his life, he actually enjoys his routine. He enjoys having his comic book Wednesday or whatever it is, and his Chinese Monday, you know, his laundry, yeah, on Sunday. He's content. You know, isn't that what life's about, being content? Why do you have to push yourself constantly? Why do you have to push boundaries that you probably aren't that interested to do because people tell you to?
Well, yeah, you know, exactly. I mean, and, you know, I do like to travel, but I couldn't imagine traveling every day or even having a job where you have to travel all the time. And then the little bit of time you get when you're at home, somebody wants to go out when you're there and you're like, I've just gotten home, I want to relax, you know. I couldn't imagine that, because I like really just doing it kind of on my own terms, doing any of this on my own terms, as anybody else does or should, really.
Or should.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's really all it is. We're all individuals. We all like individual things. And there are people like us who certainly do like the same things, and people who like things that are different from us. It doesn't mean that any one of those things are particularly bad, because I completely agree with you. You know, like, there shouldn't be a standard for it. Part of my kind of break from Doctor Who this year, I've also taken a break from conventions. You know, I haven't been to a convention this year at all, and I haven't even dressed up as a doctor this year at all. In fact, I may have done it once for something, I don't recall, but I am going to be doing one in November, because I'm on staff at the convention, basically as due to my work for Casterbris, I guess I should say. So, but I probably will still dress up at the time, just because I have friends there who do it. But, you know, it's, I do have friends that keep asking me, like, why aren't you here? Where are you? When are you doing another one? Like, when can we expect to see you? And it's just kind of like, you know, relax. I'm just taking a break. I'll be there when I'm going to be there. But nobody is like getting angry at it or thinking that I'm doing something wrong with my life. You know, it's nice to be missed. But it's also nice that people understand that. And that is something that the world definitely needs a little bit more of, just in general, is understanding.
It's funny that, isn't it? As the world gets more, in some ways, more, I don't want to say experienced, but becomes more familiar with so many different ways of living. At the same time, especially when you have so many clickbait articles which utilize that as ways of getting people to look at things and add revenue, things are still overly sensationalized and to be lauded at or laughed at, and it can become very frustrating. And yeah, I mean, I've done my traveling in my time. I must admit, I got bored. I got tired of the actual traveling bits of traveling, you know, having and the stress of planning and preparing. And I've taken a few years break from that, I guess, really. And I don't really miss it at the moment. But when you do, you go and do it. I mean, I'd love to go to Japan someday. That is the only thing the last few weeks I sort of realized that's probably one of my only bucket list things that I have now, is that I would love to go to Japan. I keep trying to learn little bits of Japanese. I'm a very slow learner, so I'm not doing particularly brilliantly. But there we go. So, yeah, Doctor Who. I suppose there's a couple of things we need to talk about. I think a couple of things that neither of us care about. So enjoy this, because you're going to enjoy us not caring. Apparently, there's a big exciting debate about, or revelation, not debate, that Doctor Who's coming back in September. I don't know. Maybe after, 10 years of this constant, when is Doctor Who coming back? I just don't care. It'll be back when it's back. And I just can't get engaged in this. Maybe also because, as we both said, we're not massively invested in the current framework of the show. So that probably doesn't help as well. Even though I do think, I do love Stephen Capaldi. And I think Stephen Capaldi. Stephen's right. I was going to call him James Capaldi then, which is, let's just go through names that are relevant to me.
Do you really love him, James?
I really love James. I think I love me. Thinking about him, which sounds disturbing. I don't know. Oh, yeah, but I like Peter Capaldi. I like Jen Louise Coleman. So, you know, it's nothing about that. But I'm just, you're not that bothered about when it comes back either, are you? You're not.
No. I mean, I'm with you. I love Peter Capaldi. I'd love to keep seeing what he's doing as a doctor. But it's kind of, you know, I don't know if all British shows are this way, but Sherlock and Doctor Who are really like killing it for me in the anticipation field. Like Sherlock, I care about that show 0% now. Mm. Used to be good, but after waiting so long for the third season and then getting the mediocre third season that we got, my interest has died. With Doctor Who, you know, I adore this show, you know, and of course I do want to watch it, but you're right. Every year it's on at a different time. Sometimes it's a split season. Sometimes it's not a split season. It's going to be delayed here because of this, that, and the other. And like, we just really don't have that kind of stuff here in the US. Or at least if TV is changing, I'm unaware of it. But, you know, I always remembered whenever I wanted to see a particular show after the summer break, I knew I just had to wait. I think May is when they all started up, or May is when they ended, excuse me, whatever they started up. I don't know. I don't watch TV live anymore, but except for The Blacklist, I got to know when that one starts. But you knew once the summer was over, this show would start up, you know, and occasionally there might be a, hey, here's some kind of odd sporting event. We're going to push the start a week out or something like that. But there was no debate. You just knew this is it. Fall's here. TV starting now. These shows are starting. And with Doctor Who, it's like they can't. Is it that they can't get a good time slot for it? Or is like, are the writers not prepared? Is the show not ready? What are they doing that's delaying it? Because really, people are watching. It's getting massive numbers. So the time slot must be working wherever you're putting it. Why can't you just stick with one? It would be nice to know, hey, guess what? It's, I don't know, August. It's Doctor Who time. You know, it would be really nice. But this waiting game, it's just not doing anything for me. At this point, I kind of have this feeling once my friends start kicking around, hey, Doctor Who's going to be on next Saturday. Well, then I'll know. You know what I mean? Like, that means there's a solid date.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's just, I'm not sitting here going, God, when's it going to be? I'm dying to watch this.
Are we just getting old? I mean, if you think Doctor Who, you know, came back, you know, we were approaching or just starting our 30s. And
Yeah.
You know, are we just getting old to the point where there are more important things to worry about? It doesn't mean that we don't look forward to the show, but we'll look forward to it when it's time. And until then, we just don't really care because we've got other things to be focusing on.
It's certainly possible. I can't argue that, because I will say I've noticed a lot of priorities in my life are changing, or certain things that I used to think were like the most important thing in the world. You know, it's kind of like, it's still fun, still good, or still important. I still want to do that, but I want to move on, kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's a bit of that. I would be very curious to actually poll some younger fans to see how they're feeling. But I got to tell you, I have a friend of mine. He's still in his 30s, so maybe he's getting where we're at. But he's kind of feeling a little bit the same. Like, he's not that excited about the show, and he's not really keeping up on news, and he's not really that interested in when it's starting up. So either he's starting that decline to where we are right now, or maybe there's a little bit more of it.
But there's also,
I got to tell you too. What's
no,
that?
Go on. I was just going to say there's such a plethora of shows as well to watch that it feels like there's always something to be focused on anyway, especially now as you say, because you don't watch TV live. There's so many things that you can sort of grab whenever you want to grab. You don't really need to be waiting on anything else, because there is something you can fill the schedule with.
Yeah, you know what? David Duchovny's new show, Aquarius, just started over here a couple weeks ago, and it's a network TV show, not a Netflix TV show or anything. And so they were going to air this show one episode per week, which is fine. It's a network show. Like I said, I just watched The Blacklist that way. It was a little bit it's a little odd after being so used to Netflix to have to wait a week for an episode, even though I've been doing it for years for Doctor Who now. But they decided, you know what? Not only are we going to do it as a network show where we're going to air one a week, they decided to release it on their own website and Hulu as well, all in one go. And I kind of thought, you know, on one hand, that's really cool. And on another hand, it's possibly not so cool. But on that first side, it's great, because if you are a person who's used to the whole Netflix lifestyle, you know, you can watch that show all you want. And with Doctor Who, I know there are many of us who watch them over and over again, provided they're good. On the bad side of that is you get this brand new show that you've been waiting for. You've got no idea when the start date's going to be, because people have their thumbs up their butts and they don't know what the heck they're doing. It finally comes out. You binge watch all 13 episodes in like 2 days. And then everybody else has all this excitement for the next couple of months because they haven't seen the episodes yet. And you're like, well, I've just finished it. And now I've got to wait another freaking year before I find out when Doctor Who might be on
again. That's true.
You know, so it is, like, to me, for instance, I'm going through Fringe right now on Netflix. My first time watching that, and really enjoying it. And I'm midway. I'm not even midway yet through season three, but I'm enjoying the heck out of it. And I love being able to put the next episode on right away. So I really do like watching TV shows in that manner. If I've got not a lot to do, or even if I'm working on a project, I can have that on while I'm working. It's great for me, you know? So part of me kind of would like if they would just say, here's Doctor Who, all in one go, here's 13 episodes. And if you're the type of person that can moderate yourself, 2 episodes a day, 1 episode a day, you can at least stretch it a little bit. You know?
I suppose the difference is like with Fringe, you're playing catch up, which is a different ball game, really, to some degree. Well, we know, well, with Doctor Who, you're always on the forefront of the next wave. Yeah. So if you binge that, you do have nothing after it.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, and if you're binge watching a show like Fringe, you've got 5 seasons worth of episodes to go through. So your excitement level is not done in 2 days, you know? So yeah, I do agree. Now, granted, The Blacklist, as I said, you know, it was really kind of, not that we particularly needed one, but it was really kind of a great bonding experience with my girlfriend, because it was a show that we watched together, a show that we both really enjoyed. One that we would, after every episode aired or in between episodes airing, we would theorize about what's really going on and what's going to happen. And we just knew that, you know, Thursday was that day. And not to bore people with details, but we catch it on iTunes the day after, just because our work schedules conflict. But the point is, you know, whatever day we had together, it was that day we were going to watch that thing. So it was fun, and it was like a bonding thing, and a great way to, you know, even if it were friends. Like, for instance, my uncle just saw me the other day, and he told me I need to speak with my cousin. And I'm like, okay, what about? What's going on? He said, she just discovered Doctor Who. And I thought, oh, wow, that's cool. That's great. Now my cousin and I, if we wanted to, we could hang out and I could catch her up on Doctor Who and we could have that cool bonding experience there as well. Like, this is a show I love. You've just discovered it. Let me share it with you. And it is, there is something to be said that you have that day of the week that you just meet up and you do that. I did it years ago at the X-Files. Whenever the X-Files was on, I invited friends over. The one rule was we can do anything we want, but when that show's on, everybody shut up, you know? And basically, you know, we could talk during the commercial breaks and we could talk about the show afterward, but it was great because we would watch the show and that was our thing. That's what we did. And then we'd theorize about it and we'd talk about it later on. And it was a surefire way to hang out with your friends once a week. And it's kind of odd. And maybe it's because, like you said, we're aging and we're older, but that doesn't really happen anymore. Seeing my friends is more of like a sometimes thing.
Yeah, that
you know?
Is an age thing.
Yeah, so it's a shame. It would be nice if something like Doctor Who could bring people back together like that, and I'm sure it could. I'm sure I could rally a bunch of people over here if I wanted to. But you know,
I mean, I was disappointed.
You really can't do that with a binge watch.
I was disappointed with my flat, my housemates, is when I moved in, and I thought, well, you know, here's people we can sort of watch things together. But they're all interested in just partying because they're younger, and you know, they're in their early 20s. And so you lose that ability to actually enjoy. The only things I have, me and my sister specifically, and actually my mother as well, you know, all love watching the Australian soap Neighbours, and that is ours because that's daily and it's perpetual. You've always got something when you ring your family to actually say, so what did you think of this today? And every day it's there because it's a soap. It means you've always got something to say. So there is something. I just think back to Doctor Who. It must be fascinating to come into Doctor Who at such different times, because whenever you come into it, we'll give you a different position on the show to someone else. I mean, for me, yeah. I know while I came in at the end of Tom Baker's era, I mean, I would say, because I was growing up, you know, Peter Davison was really my first Doctor. My memories of, as we've said before, I think, Tom Baker was possibly Leisure Hive onwards, with very, very faint ones, State of Decay, Warriors Gate, and Legopolis being the ones, and Keeper of Traken, which really sit in my mind. Don't remember Megalos or State of Decay. So Peter Davison was my first. So anything before Peter Davison was old. Anything after it was, you know, me evolving through it. Now, if you come into it like your friend at Capaldi, and depending on when your friend starts watching it, you know, again, that repositions them to how they see the show, to what is old and what is new. I mean, if you came in at 2005, I've got a couple of friends who did. To them, what is old, what is new? You know, we went through, yeah. I went through the period where McCoy was both vilified by the public, and yet Doctor Who magazine and fans actually quite liked what was happening in some of it. And, you know, we went through that. But now, to someone who came in the last 10 years, his is as old as Pertwee. And as historically retrospective as Pertwee, you know, how they're framed at the time changes, doesn't it? You know, like they always say, you know, people forget when Tom Baker first came in, he wasn't greeted with the same aplomb that he sort of got by 1977, 1978. So it changes, and your position to history changes. It must be weird coming into a show which is like 50 years old, and each coming in at different positions and thus having different perspectives.
And, you know, it's weird, too, for me, because when I first found the show, it was on PBS. Yeah. And I know we spoke about this before, but like I know I have memories of Pertwee, but my first two doctors for sure were Tom Baker and Peter Davison. I couldn't tell you which one was first that I had seen. I have no idea because I was so young. But I also don't know what my understanding of the show was like. You know, like I think I recall talking about how, like, I watched a Peter Davison episode. I must have seen Tom Baker first, come to think of it, because of this memory alone. But I remember seeing a Peter Davison episode and going, oh, what happened to the other guy? Oh, I guess they just replaced actors. You know, I was used to that with TV shows like most of our listeners probably won't have a clue with, which was Bewitched.
Yeah.
When they switched Darren, the main character's husband.
You could barely tell. It was an incredible switchover.
Yeah. Well, it was really good. And it was like, that was the thing with Doctor Who. I sat there and I was like, this is weird. Like, he's not even dressed the same. He doesn't even look the same. They didn't even try, kind of thing, you know? And then somehow I figured out about regenerations, I guess, later on when I rediscovered the show much later in high school. But it makes me wonder now, like, for instance, my cousin, where did she find it?
Yeah.
Did she find it on the Disney Channel now that David Tennant is playing there? Did she find it on BBC America, where Capaldi or Matt Smith are probably playing, or maybe even the other ones if you catch in a rerun? Like, who was her first? And then I was so young when I found it, and then I had this slightly better understanding of it in high school and already had some things to know and base opinions on. I knew different actors played the role. So once I got the gist of, oh, I see, they're meant to be the same, they just change, it wasn't that hard for me to figure out. But what about somebody who comes into the show with, say, Matt Smith?
Exactly.
And then that's it. That's their doctor. That's the setup of the show. That's what they know. And then all of a sudden they find out there's episodes prior to what they knew, and there's some different guys, and the show feels differently. How do they adjust? Because to me, while it was slight confusion in the beginning, it was really rather simple to get into it. But I have met some fans who were just like, no, I can't get into anybody else. And Matt Smith's it for me. And that era is it for them. And it is very interesting. It is very interesting to consider, because now I want to speak with my cousin. I want to know where she's at. I want to know what she knows and what she thinks of the show. And if she doesn't know that he changes, I want to prepare her, because I don't want her getting turned off of the other things, but some people just like one era.
It's like the writer comedian guy Hayden Blackwee, we spoke to a few years ago on the podcast. He said that, and a couple of people have said this, because he's a couple of years older than me and you, not by much, literally a couple of years. And yet for him, as a slightly older child, Peter Davison was ineffectual and Colin Baker was better, because he was more, you know, more character to him, as he would, I think he put it. And yet to me, Peter Davison as a kid is very, very enjoyable and very, you know, he's like a children's program character. He's very gentle, friendly. You'd want to be with him. And yet Colin Baker was abrasive and hard. And it's amazing how a couple of years can make a massive difference to how you will perceive a doctor. And even I remember my mother saying, you know, she caught Unearthly Child. And she says she still remembers how it just blew her away, because it'd be nothing like it at all. And that, you know, like the Beatles, or for me, Faith No More in the 90s, the music band, those moments where something happens which you've never seen anything like it before, which no one else after that can experience, because it is a moment of something so mind-blowing. And, you know, we won't have that. We won't have that with an Unearthly Child. When we watch an Unearthly Child, we have a legacy which we automatically compare it to. She had nothing. That was what you had. And it's just an incredible how these shows go. I mean, like in Japan, there's a show that started in 1971, a Kamen Rider. And that's been going. I mean, they do that. They seem to do that a lot more than we do. They have these perpetual TV or film series. You know, some comedy film's gone for like 40, you know, they've had 40 of them. Or the same character, same actor. And they seem to have that sort of attitude a little more. But to have like 1,000 episodes of Kamen Rider, you'd be virtually impossible for you to go back and rewatch them retrospectively, especially since they don't generate them on DVD or, you know, as an anthology like they do with Doctor Who. So it would be very hard to actually, you know, to watch that from the beginning to now, unless you're a very specialist. So the whole history and when you come into something is really fascinating.
You know, it's tough too for some people to get into the classic series, and not just because of that. You know, some people have issues with the fact that the storytelling is different, mm-hmm. the filmography is different, etc. It's odd because I can't think of any other show that sells their eras by episode rather than season.
Yeah.
You know, so it's tough here. As a matter of fact, I see a lot of posts all over Facebook of people going like, I can't complete my collection because I can't find the Two Doctors, which is out of print in the US except for like, you know, $200 or something that it's ridiculously going for now, you know. And it's like these people just want to watch these episodes and they can't. It also made me curious while we were talking here. You know, will people still find the show like you and I did? Now, granted, you were there when it was airing. I caught it on PBS well after they had aired, maybe a few years after they had aired, whichever it was. But people seem like they're going to be more prone to find Tennant or Smith, for example, or if they find the show as it's running currently with Capaldi, than they are with Tom Baker now. You know, because even over here, and I'd have to double check this, but I haven't heard of or seen a PBS station that's playing the classics. I think somebody told me about one other station here that actually might be. But will somebody actually be flipping through them and find that and find it as enchanting as, say, I did when I was a kid?
Well, when I can't remember which channel was doing it over here, was doing the reruns of Doctor Who. I mean, originally it was UK Gold, and that all changed. But even now, when they were doing the complete reruns through the series, it was UK Gold who was doing it. They would always start from Pertwee. They would never go into the black and white. Presumably because they just felt that people would not be interested in seeing the black and whites. And so you automatically have that sort of prejudice, which isn't just a broadcast prejudice. The broadcasters are reading their audience, and I imagine a lot of their audiences wouldn't want the black and whites. So they're removed, so you don't get to see them. So, yeah, I think you're right. And it's and that, again, to a certain degree, will prejudice you into what you consider the show to be, if you should consider it in anything at all.
Yeah, and I know people have also told me that some Troughton and even Hartnell stories had aired here prior to when I found the show originally in the 80s when I was a kid. But my recollection was always just they showed Tom Baker and Peter Davison. Like I said, I know I have memories of Pertwee. I have vague memories of Pertwee. I don't remember when I was a kid, like 9, 10, whatever I was, I just remembered certain times of the day you'd be out playing and then it's lunchtime. You get that call to come home. You come running home. I would turn on PBS and there would be the show. And it would always be Baker or Davison, you know. And I didn't even know about Colin or Sylvester until years later when I was in high school, you know. So I wonder even when they did air, they had to have aired in those intervening years when I wasn't watching the show. Because, you know, I can't imagine them not. I can't imagine a show that PBS loved so much that them not trying to get more episodes. But it is interesting that the black and white episodes, I didn't start seeing any of those until I was in high school. There was nothing like that when I was a kid. I didn't see them then. So, that would be tough. And I also do kind of wonder now, any PBS stations or any other kind of station like that that is airing Doctor Who over here, I wonder what they are airing. Do they air at all because they see how popular the show is here now? Or do they still just air select eras that they think are popular? I'd have to find out which stations are airing it here. I'm very curious now.
Well, there we go. Well, I suppose we should sort of wrap up a little. As I say, it is very low on Doctor Who. The only other Doctor Who news I remember this week, I remember hearing something about awards to Moffat and... it wasn't Capaldi, was it? It was. I'm sure there was some awards, Royal Award, looking towards them. I can't remember. It's the same. Just not interested. I'm not, as I say, not the greatest Moffat fan, and we know certainly you aren't. So I'm not that thrilled. And like you say, sometimes it's nice to take this little bit of a step back from current Doctor Who news, because I think the other problem with the current Doctor Who news is it is always. It is always promotional by its very nature. It is often there to promote even, you know, a new series, whether it's the production's choice to do that, the BBC's choice to do that, or even the media's choice to do that to make a story that people will listen to read. And you sort of get a bit bored of being saturated with stuff which you feel is aimed at just trying to get your attention from some party, where... you know, if you sort of find, as we've been talking about, stuff which isn't to do with that, it somehow becomes more interesting. Even down to the catches on Sonic Screwdrivers, I think is a little more interesting than what awards Stephen Moffat might be lucky enough to grab. I think we should just do a very quick recommendations, if there is anything you'd like to recommend, unless you want to not do it and just defy the order of Christian calling.
Geez, no, we can do that. That'd be fine. You may have to start though.
There's two things I've been watching this week. I've been watching on Netflix, I've been watching Space Dandy, which is a Japanese anime import. Which is a mixture of like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and Johnny Bravo. It's okay. There's a couple of episodes which are quite nice, and a couple of which just don't work for me. So it's not really a recommendation, but I did watch Attack on Titan recently, which I know is very much applauded. Japanese anime again, which was on Netflix, and that was really good. I really enjoyed that. The only other thing I say is, and it's on Casterbris now, I finished the Blake Seven Big Finish book by Paul Darrow, the third in his trilogy, his Lucifer trilogy, which is Lucifer Genesis, which is a very interesting book in a lot of ways, just on the grounds that he puts this really interesting caveat at the beginning of the book, which basically says, this book is written as a third person, but it's sort of Avon's memories and how he sees the world. So there may, any discrepancies are really down to it being perceptional on his part, which means that you can now totally ignore if you have any continuity issues, or if characters don't talk the way you think they're meant to talk, or if Avon is suddenly like this great super god, which he is throughout the book. It's all justified by this very small little caveat at the beginning of the book, which in a sense kind of makes it work, because it means you can enjoy the indulgence of it without feeling like I did when I read William Shatner's books, that just Kirk was like the super god through, you know, everyone sort of worshipped him like he was Ace Rimmer from Red Dwarf, you know, he's like, what a guy, he can just do anything. And Avon's a bit like that in the Blake Seven book, but at the same time, because it's written by Paul Darrow, and I don't believe at all it's ghostwritten. I've read his autobiography. It feels like Paul Darrow. That it just sort of kind of works. It's indulgent. It's utterly indulgent. And it's lovely to see actors who get involved in books or get involved in their characters. He has over the years so many times because they really do love that character. I was reading an old Blake Seven magazine from 1981 when it came out at the same time as the show. Interview with him there, and he's talking about the same sort of things which are in his book about how he sees Avon. And I just love it when you see actors get so involved that they want to write about them, and you know, these characters embellish them and put their own slant on them, which is what he's doing, which is why he's got his caveat. This is basically, this is how I see the Blake Seven universe, deal with it. That's cool.
Nice.
So what about you, American face?
Well, okay, I've got two. I don't remember if I recommended the one before, but the only thing I really watched of any significance outside of Fringe, and I recommended that last week, was Star Trek V.
I'm sure that's what the noise of a lot of listeners are doing right now.
Yeah, right? Because it gets a lot of flack.
It does.
But I have to be honest, I like it. I don't think it's a bad movie. I think maybe some of the, and no offense meant to William Shatner, but I think maybe some of the cinematography could have been a little bit more interesting. But it's not a bad movie. I think it's a good story. I think it's an interesting plot. And it has some really good, funny moments between Kirk, Spock, and Bones, which are some of the main reasons why I watch Star Trek. Those three characters together are just a lot of the entertainment factor from the show. But no, it's a good film. I don't really get the backlash on it. I think it was sandwiched in between some great films.
It is
films,
flawed,
but...
though, isn't it? It's a film, you'd have to admit there are a lot of flaws. I mean, I agree with you. I mean, I remember seeing it in the cinema when it came out, and I remember reading Shatner's book where he sort of says that at the time, initially, it got quite good reviews until after the first weekend, where you get a couple of bad ones, then it snowballs. And
yeah.
There is, I mean, DeForest Kelly said at the time, one of his criticisms was, I don't know if you read that he said, you just don't do science fiction on God. Just because it's just, there's just so many politics when it comes to actually producing a film, especially on a mainstream franchise, that you end up dodging the issues almost, you know. It's not quite God, it's sort of God. I think the book does a better justice framing this story better than the actual film managers. But I agree with you. As an anal fan, there's a load of things that really bug me, like the amount, this goes back to your sonic screwdriver, I'll call it obsession, you know, things like the amount of flaws on the Enterprise. I believe there's only meant to be 21, and there's like 100 and 256 or something when they use the elevator shaft, and that does my head in.
Oh, right.
And
Yeah.
the change from the standard special effects company is quite evident as well, which lets it down a bit.
Yeah, and it did seem like in some ways they went with a little bit more practical
Yeah.
effects,
There's a lot
rather
of
than like
stop.
digital
Yeah.
kind of
Well, it was
effects,
just before
which
digital really came in, wasn't it? There's a lot of
sure. Well,
stop.
yeah, but I mean they had used a fair amount of it in say the Wrath of Khan and Search for Spock when they were talking about, of course,
Oh,
the
the Genesis Planet.
yes, thank you. So I guess I
That
had
was
gotten used to some of
animated, though,
that, but
wasn't it?
I
It
like
wasn't
practical effects.
digital. That
What's
was
that?
animated. It was some ridiculous amount of. I remember reading
That
somewhere.
wasn't computer
It wasn't.
generated?
No,
I mean, I knew it was older, but I thought it was just older computers. That's
if
incredible if it
people
wasn't
can
computer generated.
want to actually correct us on this in the notes, please do. But I have a horrible feeling that I read somewhere that that was actually done frame by frame.
Well, if that was, it's some
I could
pretty
be
incredible
wrong.
work, I'll
I
give
could
it
be wrong, but
that.
I know your point. Yes, it was at the cusp of where digital was taking over. And I remember at the time thinking there was a couple of shots which felt very stop animation. There was a lot of sort of practical, there is a practical feel to it.
And I can't say it's a perfect film. I agree with that, but I don't sit there. For instance, when I watch it, there's very few times that I sit there and say, "Oh, I wish they didn't do that." Like, as a
Absolutely.
matter of fact, more often than not these days when I watch it, I just enjoy it because it is just a good
I mean,
story.
yeah, absolutely. Sorry.
But I would recommend that one just because if anybody's ever in doubt or if anybody ever didn't watch it because they were told not to watch it, I found this out recently about a couple of X-Files episodes. People were telling me that, diehard X-Files fans, they love the show, they know it inside and out, but they have never seen these two particular episodes because they read bad things about them. And I'm like, you know what? I will never do that. Like if there's a movie in the theater that I want to see, or if there's a TV show that I'm interested in seeing, I will see it to make up for myself, to make up my own mind. If somebody tells me that it was bad, well, guess what? I wanted to see it. I'm curious. I want to know what's so bad. Besides, if I had listened to people like that, I probably would have never watched Doctor Who. If certainly if I was a fan today, the way people talk about it, you know what I mean? So yeah, I think if you haven't seen it,
Yeah, I
check it
think
out.
so.
It's a good one. If you have seen it and you were one of those fans that was put off by it, well, let me tell you, maybe some age helps out there a little bit. Maybe giving it a few year break will help out there. And I don't want to talk about it poorly like that because I do think William Shatner did a good job and I think everybody involved did a good job. I certainly enjoy it. I've never put it on my no-no list for any movies that I watch. I enjoy watching those films in order, and I love how they're all like essentially connected to each other. They're all linked together, kind of like direct sequels almost, except for the sixth one, which seems like it takes place a little
Yeah, it
while
does. There's a
after.
few about 8 years after or so. But I think what with the Final Frontier, the only issues I really have, because I can you can get past special effects, I think you can get past, sort of inaccuracies like that, is that the whole idea of the center of the universe and breaking the barrier and the creature on there is never really explored enough to sort of make it feel like you, because you never really understand how they break the barrier. Because you think, well, why couldn't anyone else do it? I think there's the explanations in the book, which is missing, which could be like a poor edit or stuff removed from the script to make time or scenes which were lost. But there's just a little bit around there where it just doesn't feel like the audience is given enough to understand why this journey is so important in this way and why no one else has done it before. That sort of niggles a little as tiny things like that. But like you, I mean, I could go through. I mean, the script is there's some lovely bits in the script. I mean, the opening and the end sequences are quite beautiful between the three of them, which I love. And there's loads of little lovely little moments between them and sort of senses of comedy. There's those lovely lines like between Nimoy and Kirk. I could do with a shower. Yes, and there's that lovely line with McCoy and Kirk in the brig. You're so annoyed with him. Why don't you throw him in the brig? And there's just it's a film about the three of them a lot, and I think sometimes what sours is a lot of people, especially when they look back at Star Trek after Next Generation, think it's an ensemble cast. And I know a lot of the secondary characters often thought of themselves as an ensemble cast, but I always saw it as three main ones and a strong supporting set of characters. And Star Trek V is essentially more about Kirk and Spock, but it's really about the three of them essentially. And then the rest play light-hearted roles to give it a bit of a bit of flourish.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of like you get the Wrath of Khan, which is a pretty dark film, essentially. And then, even the Search for Spock can be certainly dark in what they're doing. And then you get Star Trek IV, where they're like, we just have these dark, let's lighten this up a little bit. Star Trek V is kind of like, well, rather than just go straight back to dark, let's ease us in with a light kind of darkish story by what's going on. And I thought it was like a good progression, because then you get right back to Star Trek VI, which brings it back to a dark place again. I think it's a nice flow. And like I said, I watch those films as if they're all companion pieces to each other. Certainly 2, 3, 4, and 5 all work directly in relation with each other and where they left off, and it works really well. So yeah, I think they found a good flow with them. I do agree it has a different feel to it, and Nimoy seemed to do well directing his to make it look like the previous film, to make it feel like the previous film. And I will say that Shatner's film felt different in some ways to that, but with the characters and the world being what it was, it's not completely disconnected. It's still the same world, and it's still
Yeah,
enjoyable.
absolutely. I would really recommend, if you've not, if you've not really involved yourself in the original cast, watching Star Trek's two. I mean, I know there is the distance in temporal period. 2 till 6 is a great run, because it does, because six does carry relevance to Spock, to Kirk's issues from 3, and the son that he meets in 2. So there is a sort of progression there, and I think there's a progression for Spock, because obviously by 4 he is a different Spock, and 4, 5, and 6 you see that very clearly. And especially a lovely line, I liked him better before he died, that McCoy has in 5. So there's some great stuff in 5. There's some stuff which doesn't work. I never had an issue with Cyborg. I know people sort of said this half brother coming out of nowhere, but he's a private character, Spock. Why? I wouldn't imagine him telling Kirk about any of his family unless he had to. And yeah, so just go and watch it, enjoy it. Stop worrying what people think. Just go and find it good.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a good time, well recommended here.
Absolutely.
I did
Oh,
have a second one.
go on, sorry. I
See if
loved
we
your
can
first
try
one,
and
you
do
see,
some
so.
quick. Well, no, hey, no, that's good. I love that you love that. It makes good conversation, so it's great. I don't remember recommending this before, but I finished maybe a month ago, I guess, reading the Superior Spider-Man storyline, which I originally avoided, just because I was one of those people at first that was like, I want to watch Peter Parker be Spider-Man. I don't want to read somebody else be
Just so
Spider-Man
people
kind of thing.
understand, this is when Dr. Octopus takes, so in the comics, takes over Spider-Man's body and starts living his life as Dr. Octopus, with Doc Ock would live it. Sorry, carry on.
I was heading there. No, it's quite all right. It's quite all right. But yeah, no. So, but what I have to say is so great about it is, number one, it's not a very long span for comic books. It lasted probably 2 years, which really, in the grand scheme of things, is very tiny, especially when you realize to get the trade paperbacks of the full stories, it's only 6 trade paperbacks, and they're all of equal size, which is about maybe 5 to 6 issues per book. So it's really not a lot of stories. But what's great about it is when you put Doc Ock in Peter Parker's body, which is what they did, and that's important to know, because here you have Dr. Octopus running around as Spider-Man, but he's also living the life of Peter Parker. You get to see just how powerful a character Spider-Man could be if he didn't hold himself back, if he didn't restrain himself in some way. He knows that one punch could, basically pop a human's head off their body, if you want to say it that way. He can cause some serious damage, but he pulls his punches. He'll even pull his punches with some of the big superheroes or supervillains that he fights, because he just doesn't want to kill or damage them very badly. He's also, now I know that both Peter Parker and Doc Ock are scientists, and the storyline prior to Superior Spider-Man, we saw that Peter was finally coming into his own, and he was working for Horizon Labs, and he was inventing things almost on Iron Man level. He was inventing for himself stealth suits, voice-controlled web shooters, all sorts of different devices that he used to stop, say, the Sinister Six, and then those devices got put into ordinary use for life purposes. For instance, freezing somebody like Hydro Man, I think it was Hydro Man anyway, that kind of cryogenic freezer became a new way to transplant organs. rather than just a regular cooler. So Peter was doing some great things. So we already got to see in the comic books to show his intelligence, which is a side to Peter we always knew existed, but they always downplayed because he was always too hard on his luck to do anything really about it. But now what we get to see, something that Peter couldn't show us before because he wouldn't allow himself, is Doc Ock in control and being no holds barred. If he wants to stop a villain, he will do whatever it takes to stop that villain, and he will show the true strength that Spider-Man, that Peter Parker has. If he wants to fight the Avengers, he can practically take them all down. And in fact, in one issue, he did pretty much take them all down, and they did get the upper hand, of course. But you just get to see what Spider-Man could be like if he unleashed his true potential. And so that's something I took from the storyline, aside from getting like an interesting insight into what Doc Ock is like and what he thinks like. It was really a fascinating thing for not just the fans of the Peter Parker's world within the comics, but the fans in reality to see that this is this character that myself, he's, if you don't know, listening to these things already, he's my favorite comic book character, superhero. To see something that I always felt was true, that he's just really got massive strength and massive intelligence, but the intelligence he uses, but he's down on his luck a lot. He can't use it to really make a buck usually. But the strength, he can stop a lot of these people a heck of a lot easier, but he won't because he knows that that could cause damage to them. It's incredible to see. So it was a very good storyline, very well told. I don't know why I had honestly avoided it in the first place. I was just being a naysayer because, you know, I guess I don't like change. As is the usual thing for anybody who doesn't want to read anything like that. But it's a small investment, very interesting stories. It unfolds a whole new life for Peter that, of course, when he comes back to his body, he's stuck in this whole world, which is completely different to the way he left it. So Dan Slott needs some major credit here because he's written some great Spider-Man stories over the years. And for him to have pulled this one off and to make people like myself for sure like it, that's a massive feat. So major props to Dan Slott there. It was a very good story.
He started in 2008. I used to read his stuff years and years ago before he and Mark Miller and Grant Morrison all flew the coup and went to America to dominate it with all their material. Mark Miller's stuff was first stuff was awful. I used to hate it. I never imagined he'd become the powerhouse he has become, and a good powerhouse as well. Anyway, well, I think that's it for us this week, talking about as much stuff that isn't Doctor Who that is. I will leave you all to struggle with Windows 8 if you are. We, however, will probably go to slightly less irritating platforms than the one that I've had to be fighting against. We'll be back next week. I don't think it's us again, isn't it, next week? It's not. Have we got Christian?
I did think he said it was 2 weeks he was going to be gone.
So we haven't got him next week either, so it will be us again. Leave us feedback if you feel that you want us to sit on a particular topic rather than just ramble. We're quite happy to do so, especially if you actually give us a topic. If you've got something better, let us know. But, you know, if you don't tell us, you'll just get us talking like this again. And who can you blame? Just yourself. Bye.